Hey, what's going on? You know who it is. It is Bruce Jordan, the Michael Jordan of the hotels. And today, thank you for joining us for another of Best Hotel Books podcast. We have Mandy in the house, the author, sales tells. What's going on, Mandy?
Hey, Bruce. Thanks for having me. It's so good to see you.
Same here. Same here. Listen, I know you've been hustling and bustling over there. But if you can, how did you get started in this business? Tell us, give us the details.
Oh, boy. That's a juicy story with so many plot twists along the way. But, you know, there's two rounds of this. I would say I first started in the hospitality business when I was 12 years old. And I worked at a banquet and conference center in Ohio, in Cleveland, Ohio. And on Saturday nights, I was the hostess. And remember those signs that had the black, the felt on the black back, and then it had the white letters that you had to put in there. Like my fingers would hurt from putting the letters in there of the names, right? The names of the brides and the grooms. And so I made the signs. I was a hostess on Saturday. And then on Sundays, I would come in, and this was 40,000 square feet of event space, 8 banquet rooms. I would vacuum the whole place, and then I would wash dishes. So that was my first, I would say, hospitality job where I got the itch. But in the real hotel job, how I got started is I made a New Year's resolution. I won a free trip to Ireland in 1999. It was a radio station giveaway. And I didn't win. Actually, it was my roommate that won, and she took me as her traveling companion. And it was this all-expenses-paid trip to Dublin, Ireland. The host was Miller Genuine Draft. It was like a true radio station promo. And they flew 180 Americans, 500 Europeans to this concert, and they called it the Blind Date Concert, they don't tell you who it is. And they marketed it all through Ireland as Big Beyond, small venue, big mystery. They dropped the curtains. It was Smashing Pumpkins. It was spectacular. And I thought, okay, I got to make a New Year's resolution that matters because like this was it. And so my New Year's resolution was that by the time I was 25, I was 24 at the time, that I would apply to jobs to get out of Ohio. And I started applying to hotel jobs. And I had never worked at a hotel before that. I was a marketing manager of that same banquet and conference center that I was back when I was 12. Fast forward like 12 years later, I was working there as a marketing person. But I had never worked for a hotel and I was interested. I was obsessed. Like once a hotel opens, it never closes. I was fascinated. And I applied to all these hotels and Sheraton San Diego was the only one that would hire me. And so I packed up my moving truck and my car and I traveled cross country and I started as a catering manager at the Sheraton San Diego in August of 2000.
Wow, that's amazing because San Diego, I hear, is such a beautiful city. Like everyone that visits there, they say they wish they can move there. It's so beautiful.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And we're having the most beautiful like weather right now. It is beautiful. We're very lucky here for sure.
Man, so we got everything going on with Sales Tells. Tell me what inspired you to write this book?
Yeah, you know, I've been keeping journals since I was a little girl. Like I was the person that I always have a journal with me. And I carried that into my work life where I always have a journal. So I was writing like weird customer stories, bad boss stories, crazy coworker stories. And I always embellished their characters because I believed I was going to write a fiction book, right? Hmm. And I met with a writing coach in 2017, I can't remember what year. And she said, okay, you're not, she totally burst my bubble. She's like, you're not a fiction writer. And I was like, what? I've been collecting these stories for years. Are you crazy? Like what now? What do I do? And she's like, can you write about business? Because there's a problem in business right now. Like we've all read all the sales 101 books. We've all read the business 101 books. There's not enough stories and there's not enough humor. So can we do that? And so I went to the drawing board and I wrote a really funny business book that were literally stories dragged out from those journals. But I intentionally did it in the order of a standard sale. So it starts with prospecting, networking, building relationships, making a pitch, closing a deal. I talk about COVID in 2008 and 2001 about disaster selling. And it goes through the standard order of a sale. And since, you know, my background's in hospitality, there's a ton of hotel stories in there. I had to change some names to protect the innocents and protect the jerks. It was an accidental business book. And I'll always write funny business books now because I that was my lesson. And all of this is like, yes, those other business books we read are awesome and there is a place for them. But we need more levity in our business world right now, especially in the hospitality industry. So I was happy to provide some humor and some really practical, tactical tips that were just literally dragged out from my journals.
You know, it's crazy. The funniest thing I heard is that she said, you're not a fiction writer, but you can be a comedy writer.
Ready? Yeah. Well, you know, some of the best comedians are just telling their awful real life stories, right?
That is absolutely true.
Yeah.
And the other thing is like I agree with you 100% that sometimes, especially in hospitality, like people take things way too seriously. You have someone screaming at you, they don't even know you. You know, they don't know you and they're screaming at you. That means it's not about you. It has nothing to do with you. So just to even have some comedy involved really helps out a lot.
And I think like it is so easy when you're in a 24-hour operation. Whether it's a hotel or a hospital, it is so easy to get mired in the seriousness of it, right? Because you're ultimately, when somebody's yelling at you at the front desk, you're not dealing with a jerk. You're dealing with somebody who's going through some fear, right? Like they're worried they're going to miss their flight. They're worried they're not going to get a good night's rest. They're worried about a big speech they've got to give the next day. So I think like if we can make some humor, you know, obviously solve the problem, but then look at it with a little bit of humor or bring some levity to that guest, I think we're really looking at hospitality in the right way. Because you're like inviting people into your home. And what's a house without humor, right? So I think we could build on the fear that's delivered to us, or we can just dispel it and provide some humor with it.
Well, what is the biggest sell like you've ever had? Like how many rooms was involved in one contract?
Jeez, that's a good question.
Tell us, how did you actually land the deal? Like what did you have to do to close that deal? Like walk us through the steps.
You know, I think it's different from the hotel. You know, I was on the hotel side for 11 years and now I've been on the third party agency side for 14 years. So I think it's different on both sides. I would say, on the hotel contract side, I don't know if it was the biggest one, but it was my most proud one. And it was maybe 4,000 room nights, which sounds like a lot. But at that time, I had worked at a really huge big box convention hotel. And that was just the business that we did. And it was for a marathon, but it was a spinoff of a marathon. And I was very young in my sales career at the time. And I planned out the site inspection to a T, and I knew it was healthy. And I knew that they would be looking to our hotel to have water stations out front. And so I collaborated with our ops team. I worked with our spa. I worked with our destination management company. So when they came for the site, they walked the client through the story that we would tell. And that story was like, from the minute you get here on staff, here's how we'll take care of your staff. Then 2 days later, from the minute your participants get here, from the time they pick up their bib to the time they, you know, register, the time they get their swag and they have their water stations, here's how they will feel. And then involved the chef of like, here's what the carb load menu looks like. And then involved, you know, every different person on property. So somebody actually felt like they walked through it. And at the time, it was a big deal for the destination because we hadn't done a lot of business with the destination. For this particular account. Now it's all over San Diego and multiple cities across the country. So I think like collaborating with my operation peers, being really spirited and upbeat about it, you know, I think attitude and energy is everything. And then really sharing with the customer what to expect when they actually had the program. I think that was one piece. And then, you know, being on the HPN side, you know, I've booked a lot of citywides and mini-wides. And anytime you're doing something like that, where it's 5,000 people, 10,000 people, you've got to provide something for everybody. And that's where those relationships come into play and those multiple hotels. So it's not just the convention center, right? You're fighting for convention center availability. Mm-hmm. And you're fighting because sometimes people have like this 18-month window, depending on the city. This particular circumstance, there's an 18-month window. So I had to push in there and be like, it's 20 months. Can we just get in there a little bit early? Right. But I had built those relationships. And then it's also with a convention center and a multiple hotel booking like that. It's really educating the customer. This is a customer who had done plenty of meetings all under one roof, but hadn't done a convention center booking yet. So it's educating the customer on, here's how convention centers work. Here's how their rentals work. Here's what the union looks like. Here's what you can expect. And just really being an expert on guiding my customer through that. And then making sure you have hotels at different price points for all the attendees. Because some attendees want their Bonvoy points and some want their Hilton points and some want an independent boutique hotel. So it's really working through that. And that one, gosh, I think that one was like 6,000. Total room night, or not 6,000 total. Yeah, 6,000 people, but it was like, I don't know, 4,500 room nights or something like that. I mean, because, you know, people stay in their own hotels and they don't always go through the block, even though you want. But even something like that, it's educating the customer on like, hey, here's some verbiage you can put on your website that will stimulate people to book in the block. Here's some incentives you could put on the website that stimulate people to book in the block. But as you know, in the revenue world, the buyer.
The block doesn't always work.
It doesn't work. Well, the link is broken sometimes.
Yeah,
right? The link is broken, or your 1-800 number, your staff isn't trained sometimes. And so things happen. But the other thing is buyers are savvy now. And sometimes they just book around the block. Not that they're malicious or bad intended humans. It's easier for them to do. They don't want to go through the house. They don't want to click the multiple links or whatever that is. So, you know, I think just educating the customer on like the 100% of your people, if you have a city with, they're not going to stay in the hotel. You want them to, but they're just not always going to do that, and just really educating. So I think, you know, my thing is just really disarming the customer, educating them, and being with them all along the way.
Nice, nice. Tell me about some of the issues that you had with revenue management. Like, I can imagine how many times you got rejected. Like, we can't do this. You're gonna sell us out, and we're gonna be overbooked. Like, yeah. what things would you do about that stuff?
Well, you know what's funny? I love this question, and I appreciate you asking, because I think, you know, we've been around. You and I have been around. We've been around the block. You know, we've been around long enough. I hate this stigma that it's like sales versus revenue management. Yeah. It's never been like that with me. I've always gone into it of like everybody has a job to do, right? Mm-hmm. So let me understand your job. Tell me, arm me with information, make me smarter so I can educate the customer. And then also, I've had some great revenue directors that are like, Mandy, help me understand this business. Help me understand this client. That hasn't always happened. You know, I've worked with some jerks too, as we all have. And I'm sure revenue people have worked with some sales jerks. But I think like the issues that exist between the two is just a lack of understanding of each other and an unwillingness to have a little empathy and understanding for the other person's job. Like, I learned early on when I would get rejected for something, it was because I didn't provide enough information. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I started coming to the table with information, and when I say information, I mean historical data, right? Like, what's our pickup this time last year? What are we looking at next year? Does the day of the week fall differently for this? And can we take a little bit of a risk? And what is the propensity to pay? If we don't like the rate, how can we make it up in food and beverage? Like, coming to the table with 3 or 4 backup options. So it's not just like, no, it's like, okay, cool. You don't like that. What if we did this? Okay, you don't like that. What if we did this? I'm always like really an advocate for salespeople. Like, put your boxing gloves on and bring the revenue people something they can better understand. Now, that was a long time ago. Now, with AI-generated revenue, a lot of times salespeople don't have the opportunity to make their pitch. They don't have the opportunity to explain. And I do think as a buyer now, I think that's a real difficult thing. And I think AI is awesome. I think automation is awesome. But I do think there still needs to be a beautiful blend between the human element and the automation, because you are missing out on some great customers by not working through that. You know, so I just think, let's just try and understand each other. Let's understand what's relevant and then come prepared to those meetings and build your case.
I couldn't agree more. I use AI as a guide. I don't let AI finalize any decisions. And the reason why, because I use a lot of those revenue management programs. And most of the time, I'll probably say 50% of the time they're off, because they can't forecast irregular demand. They can only forecast the demand that they see. They can only forecast the rates that they see. And a lot of times their rates is a little bit understated for me. So those are just things that they just can't catch, no matter how much information you put in the system. And if you put in a bunch of information in the system, you put in so much that you just might as well do it yourself.
Right? You're like, I know this. I've circled this cul-de-sac. I know what to do there. Yeah. And I also think, like, I think there's something that's happened in the sales world, especially in hotel sales, where either we're not training our salespeople well enough, we don't have time to train it, or the salesperson doesn't know their ability to invest in themselves and their own training. Is like, knowledge is power. And when you really understand how yield management really works from a hospitality standpoint, as a salesperson, just do yourself a favor and try and understand that. Because then you're developing a great relationship, but you're also being super powerful to your customers. Like, I don't know any customer that's like, hey, I don't want to understand how a hotel works, right? Most people don't understand how a hotel works, but if you explain it to them, they do. But I feel a lot of salespeople right now don't understand how a hotel operates or works or is profitable. And I don't think that's their bad. I think, like, no one's explained the value of understanding, or they don't have time to, or they're new to the industry and they're just overwhelmed with all this other information. And they're like, I'll get to that later. And 10 years are in and they still don't know they don't understand how a hotel works, kind of thing.
That is correct. That is correct. And I think the other part of the coin is accounting, because, you know, sales tend to bump heads with accounting more than probably revenue management.
Yeah.
What are some of the issues that you had with accounting, and how did you solve it?
I mean, with my personal accountant, that's a whole other story. But we'll just stick with hotel accounting. That's another department that I always made best friends with, because they're collecting the money that you have worked so hard to put into the hotel. So I think the issues you run into, it's general communication, right? Your contract language isn't matching your turnover notes. Is it matching information that you've given to the CS person? Is it matching the information the CS person's given to the finance? That's four adventures right there where there's an opportunity for a mess up. And again, humans are flawed. We are great people. Everybody has great intention. But I think if you're not keeping an eye on that adventure along the way, something can go awry. So I really think, not knowing the accounting systems, like being like, hey, director of finance, walk me through this. Like, how do you do a credit application? Like, who do you use? What do you ask? What numbers are you looking for? Because, like, to me, what I run into as a buyer from an accounting standpoint is the hotel won't do a credit check for 90 days till 90 days out, right? But then the credit agency may not get back to them for 30 days out. And by the time that trickles to the finance person, to the CS person, they're getting it to the customer like 6 days out. I'm like, by the way, we checked your credit. You owe $300,000 more. Do it tomorrow. And now it's a meeting planner within 2 weeks or in crunch time. And they don't have time to request an urgent $300,000 check from their accounting. It's not that they don't have it. It's just from a processing standpoint, they just don't have the bandwidth to do it. So I really think, like, again, as a salesperson, sit with your director of finance. Understand how they work. Understand their timelines. I think a lot of finance departments now, especially in hotels, are very short-staffed. Mm-hmm. So find out, like, what are your pressure points and where can I help? You know, not do your job, but what information can I provide? Is it something you add to the contract? Is it a conversation we have with the customer when they're at the short list? Like I have some customers where the deposit schedule and cash flow is really important. So I will ask that when we're down to three final hotels, I'll ask for this particular customer, I'll ask, what's your deposit schedule? When is this due? When is this due? Because there are certain customers that just, they can't do it. And if they can't do it, that hotel's off the grid, right? So I think just I think on my side as a meeting planner, understanding everything. And then I think on the hotel side, just salespeople just connecting with the finance people to understand. Because like it's communication, right? Mm-hmm. It's last minute shuffles. It's, oh, oopsie, I didn't know that. Or if you're a salesperson, you're planning, you're doing your expense report and you're over, you may not understand that your budget was baked like 10 months ago.
Yes,
and your
right.
finance people are paying the bills based on your budget. Now, yeah, maybe you've added an extra day because you can see 10 more customers, or they may not know that. So just communicating that and just really understanding how different important things work.
Wow. That was pretty good. That was pretty good. Tell me about bonuses. Like, how do you believe bonuses should be structured based off of performance versus the way they're actually doing it back when you was doing hotel?
It's so stupid. Like, I think it's so dumb the way it was done when I would. So you would bring, I'll give you an example. I worked mm-hmm. for Caesars Entertainment. Mm-hmm. I had a goal for one quarter. I think my goal was $5 million. I brought in $10 million. That was one quarter, right?
Nice job.
Thank you. Right. My team's going to turn on the old
way. Right.
I mean, this was like 15 years ago, but I'll take it. I'll take a retroactive clap. The team's goal was like 20 million or 10 million. And the team brought in 20 million. I can't remember all the numbers, but I do remember my commission check. Mm-hmm. And it was a check for $3,700. And that was just for the quarter. And again, Caesars is a great brand. They are a great company. They're very well run. They have some of the best salespeople in the world. Las Vegas has some of the best salespeople in the world. I don't think this is a function of Caesars. I think this is a function of hotels in general, the commission. Like, I think if you're looking at the amount of money the sales teams and the CS teams through their upselling and the sales teams are bringing in, and I don't know if it should just be sales and CS. I almost feel like it should be a commission team approach, right? Like, you bring something in, you hit some of these numbers, like, let's go group by group and figure out what that commission is. Is it a pay for performance? Or maybe give a salesperson the opportunity. You might have a young, hungry salesperson who's a great saver. Give them an opportunity for a lower salary and a higher commission if they want.
You know?
I think if they want. I think it's that choice. I think traditionally, hotel salespeople get these great salaries and they get lower commission. But they forget they're getting a great salary. And most sales I interact, you know, I do sales coaching for sales in all different sales industries. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think hotel salespeople are one of the highest base salary paid, lowest commission. But other people in different industries are making way more money because they're higher commission. And I think that's a very personal thing. Like, not everybody can be 100% commission. They just don't. That's just not in their DNA. But for those that are, let's reward them and pay them for performance. I do think something's broken in the way hotels pay salary and pay commission, but I don't blame anybody because it's been the way it's been. I mean, I've been at this 25 years. I haven't seen it done any differently in 25 years. Have you? Have you seen it done differently?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Which is why my next question you can answer honestly now.
Yeah.
How much business do you believe sales is required to bring in? Like, everybody has their own personal number. Like, do you think it's, you know, 25% of the business for the hotel, 50% of the business for the hotel, 70%? Like, what's a reasonable number for you personally?
I think you have to look at the business mix.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a business mix where your pie chart is heavy on group, I really do believe it's 100%. Because you can throw out some automation, you could throw out some clicky poos and buttons and all that. But at the end of the day, sometimes customers, they don't know what they're buying or how to buy. And you're leaving money on the table there.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you add all your little upsell buttons, right? But I also think that a lot of hotels accept the business that's coming to them. But when you actually strategically figure out, this is the perfect customer. Here's the profile of the perfect customer, the perfect group. Let me go after that type of business. When you're actually going out for the type of business that you want, it does require a sales skill set. Like you, that can't be automated. If you, you know, and I do think right now, because of all of the dispersed workforce, right? Like all the redistributed workforce, I think in the old days, business transient used to be, could be a little more automated with, you know, all the different automations. But now, because it's so redistributed, I think the BT people, they got to get in there and redevelop those relationships. So I think, like, I think group really is 100%. If you want to go after the right kind of business that's a high profit margin, high cost, or a low cost, high value, right? Mm-hmm. If you just want to crank through the business that's coming in, sure, you can automate that. But I think it's 100% for group, maybe 60% for BT. And then transient, I don't know as much about transient, but as we know, you know, you can book things online and people are savvy. So, you know, like the wholesaler and the leisure market, super, super important. That relationship for long-term stuff is important. But do you need a dedicated multiple salespeople for that? I don't know the answer to that. But I think the relationships are, they're important. I think it's got to be a mix of all of it.
Nice. Nice. Now give us one. Give us a sales tell out of the book.
I know. So I've got it right here. It's funny. And you were going to ask me that. And I thought of like a couple. You know, I think one of my favorite sales tales, and I say this is probably geared towards sellers in general, but it could be geared towards operators working with an employee that just isn't awesome. Mm-hmm. It's in chapter 5. It's in the time management chapter, which is hilarious. It's called Time is Your Greatest Asset. Use it wisely. But the time management chapter is the longest chapter in the book. Is that ironic, right? That's just ironic. I didn't plan it that way. I just had a lot to say about time management. But I think firing customers, like letting yourself know when you've got to release toxic people or toxic business relationships. And when you look, once you release that and you look back and you're like, whoa, I now have more space to better manage my team, or I now have more space to be a better servant to some of my existing customers, my portfolio. And I think that's another thing we do. We operate out of fear. Like we're like so worried that that same group isn't going to be here every single year that we just take them. But every year that group gets worse and worse, or the contact gets worse and worse, or, you know, they're not evolving with the times, with how they're making reservations or whatever that is, that you look back and you're like, man, I should have nipped this in the bud 6 years ago. Now we're at this 10 years and, you know, the hotel's suffering. So I really think just knowing when to release yourself from toxic situations, toxic people, toxic business partners. And I think that goes for GMs. You've got a vendor that was brought in for whatever reason many years ago. You haven't done an audit of it in a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to keep your vendors honest. And I'm not saying pit each other against each other. I don't believe in that. But I just think like the market conditions change, personnel changes, service changes. So, you know, there may be a time where you give that vendor an opportunity to revisit their pricing, revisit their offerings, provide you a little more value. If they can't modify their pricing, is there technological value to it? Is there a way that makes it easier for people on property to buy? You know, so and then release. You know, if people aren't working with you anymore, if it doesn't serve you, if you don't serve it, just release the employee, release the client, release the vendor. Just make those business decisions that are best for you and for the business, and not out of fear of losing it.
Yeah, I just recently had to replace an old 30-year-old Mitel system at one of my properties. Yeah. You better buy some. I'm serious. And I was taking bids, and you know, I was getting these crazy bids. And I'm like, I can understand this was 30 years ago, but most of this stuff was cloud based. There's not a whole lot going on. The telephones, you're using the same old switches that are there. So
right. There's
no way this should cost $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. And I end up getting it for like $2,400 by the time I finish taking bids.
Good for you. See, but how many of your peers are just re-upping? Because they're just supposed to re-up, right? And that reminds me of like two things in a hotel, like the resort fee. Like people are, the resort fee people are charging right now. You get here's the value I've seen. It's, and I'm not, and this is jokes. Like I'm not considering this valuable. I'm saying some hotels are charging $50 for a resort fee and you get phone calls in the room. Who uses the phone? You get a newspaper delivered to your door. Who does that? And you get parking. How many convention travelers park, right? So like, to me, I don't mind paying a resort fee if there's value to it. Like, give me a food and beverage credit. Give me a boarding pass printing. Give me comp internet in the guest room and in my meeting space. Like, let's look at what the modern day amenities are, the modern day value, and charge what you want to charge, but include those. You know, I think we don't revisit it. The same with a no-walk clause in a contract. It cracks me up in a no-walk clause in a contract where it still says the general manager will call you and personally apologize. Like, nobody cares. The GM doesn't have to call. And the general manager will send you a personal handwritten letter. Nobody cares. Just get them in a room. Get them in a decent room that's of equal or greater value, that's within a close distance. Oh, the other relocation clause. They will allow you to make two personal phone calls. I've got a cell phone, bro.
Yes, like, you're right.
I don't need that. Yeah. So I think like these are things we just do over and over. We're not re-looking at like let's have a reload clause. Yeah. But what value can we put in there? Resort fee? Fine. What value? And if you as a property can't determine that value, reduce it, remove it, give your salespeople the opportunity to add it on as an option.
Yeah.
But when you're charging $50 for parking nobody's going to use and, you know, and a phone call inside the room that nobody's going to use, you just like you can't in good faith make that like a value add that you're giving to your customers.
You know, what's crazy is that most of the hotels that actually charge resort fees are the ones that they never renovate. Like they had the same box they had for like 20, 30 years. Like, what am I paying this fee for?
What am I paying this fee for? And customers now are savvy. Like I think before people would be like, okay, I get it. It's the cost of doing business. And now they're like, we're not in our guest room at all. We're in the meeting space. We're out and about. We don't get any value in it. And so I appreciate when customers challenge it. But I also, like, I don't mind paying a resort fee as long as there's value to it. Like, I love the resorts that give you the beach chair access. They get, you know, they give you things with it. And you're like, okay. And let's say they give me a $5 Starbucks coupon, right? I'm going to spend more than $5. But because you gave me $5, I'm going to Starbucks instead of walking out the door to go to a coffee shop down the street. You know, like it could end up being profitable for the hotel if they include things in there that make sense.
Absolutely. And they can get that from other local. They can barter with other local businesses so to bring some business into them. So, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Totally.
But listen, this is our time. Tell everybody where they can get the book.
So you can get my book wherever you find books. So it's on Amazon. It was the best selling in all five categories on Amazon. You can get it on Barnes & Noble, Walmart, wherever you buy your books. And I've got an audio book, too. So if you listen through Apple or Audible or however you listen to your books, you can do that. And you can go to my website, too, for if you want a signed copy. You can go to mandygraziano.com and get my book through the website, too. And it's I always tell people if you've been in the hospitality industry, number one, you might know some of the characters in the story. If you don't know the characters, you probably have been in at least like 60 to 70% of these situations. So you'll identify, you'll feel like we're like kindred spirits at the end of it.
Nice, nice. Tell everybody how they can get into contact with you because I know you do coaching.
Yes, I'm so available. So you can email me at coach@mandygraziano.com. And my coaching is super fun. My sales coaching, I coach one-on-one sales teams. And we do a lot of great work, fun with follow-up, how to stay on customers' radar, how to be more memorable in the marketplace. Trade show season, I have a really fun networking in the new world and behind the screen, which I think is super important. And then I got a great time management hack thing that I just created a couple months ago because people were asking me for it. Mm-hmm. So it's funny. I specialize in sales, but like I was just giving a speech a couple weeks ago and it was all hotel operators, HR people and salespeople, and they all got a couple nuggets out of it. So I like to say I'll stay in my sales lane, but I think we're all selling all the time and we all need to get comfortable with that and help be a little more comfortable with the sales, no matter what department you're in. So, you know, whatever you have, whatever your needs are from a coaching perspective, I'm happy to look at it. And if I can help you, I'd love to. And if I can't, I've got a lot of friends that do a bunch of different things that I'm happy to refer you to.
Yeah, I feel like everybody needs to be selling. You know, that's the number one thing. And the fact that it's an audiobook means they have no excuses.
Right? And my audiobook, because I love audiobooks, but how many times are you listening while you're walking the dog or you're on a long drive?
Or in the gym.
At the gym, and you forget the nuggets. So on my audiobook, I actually timestamp the nuggets. And on my website, you can actually go to the website, click on resources. And all of the resources I mentioned in the audiobook are downloadable from my website. That way you don't have to like worry about stopping and putting a note in your phone or whatever. I made it easy on the website for you.
Nice.
And they're free. Those are free resources.
See, she has all the bases covered.
Yeah. I'm so passionate about our industry. And I've been so lucky to have so many great people lift me up and help me along the way. And I feel like this is the least we can do. Like, Bruce, you're doing this amazing podcast and you're educating people on great books in the hotel business, right? Like, you're doing your part. And, you know, my part is to help lift up the sales game. And I think if we haven't been doing this as long as we have, we would be crazy if we stopped today, right? Like, we're doing this because we're passionate about it. If you're passionate about it, like, we've got to reach out a hand to help people too.
Absolutely. Because, you know, a lot of people, they feel like I don't have the skills. They don't know where to get them from. There's people that have the skills that's ready to work for you, whether it be from a distance or one-on-one. So I try to make sure I don't want to give anybody any excuses not to do anything, especially when there's people like us that's willing to help.
Absolutely. And people, I don't know about you, but like I was really lucky to have great hotel training. Mm-hmm. And the hotel training now is still great. But you might be sitting at a hotel being like, I love this training and here's this other element I want to learn more about, but it might not be a part of your current curriculum. People can invest in themselves. And that's what I've been seeing on my training side is like, people like training, right? But there's like one or two people from totally different departments that might not be related to sales that are reaching out because they want to invest. Like I just did some coaching for a CFO all of last year, one-on-one coaching, who was like, I just want to better understand the sales process, the sales team. And I love that. Like he was so valuable to his company because he was better understanding it. So I think like we're in a world now where there's all these resources. We can invest in ourselves. And if there's a little something we want to learn about that might not be in the paid curriculum, you just invest a little bit in yourself and you're a little more powerful and knowledgeable in the marketplace then too.
I don't know who that CFO is, but he is a genius.
Genius, total genius. Yes, it's a confidential client, but it was one of my favorite things to do because I learned a lot about the CFO. You know, I learned a lot about the finance process that I didn't know, but he was curious. And I think that would be like my parting words for your audience is like, stay curious, use curiosity as a superpower. Ask questions. No question is dumb. Like this CFO, I've been doing this for years and he was asking me questions, saying like, oh gosh, this is probably a dumb question. I'm like, so many people doing your job should have asked this question a long time ago. So yes, ask and like remove that ego piece and keep that humility and be like, I don't know about this. I'm going to ask some questions and stay curious.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is fantastic. The reason why I do these podcasts and write books and do my videos is because I was once that person, you know what I mean? Where when I started out as a clerk, an accounting clerk doing accounts payables. And if I just increase 1% at a time, that 1% in our industry can be hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I'm with you. Yes. Yes. So. And increase your knowledge. Like I think the Gen Zers right now, who I adore, I do so much training with them. They want to move up. They want to grow. But if you invest in yourself and then grow your knowledge by 1%, you're going to race past any competitor your age and maybe some of the Gen Y or millennials, you know, who may not invest in themselves. I mean, I think every generation is investing in themselves, but I know Gen Zers for sure, they want to grow, they want to go quick, and they want knowledge. And like you said, if you increase your knowledge 1%, you're going to grow a lot faster. You're going to get to where you want to go a lot faster.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Mandy, thank you so much for being on our show. We really
Thanks for
appreciate you. You got
having
some really good stories,
me.
some juicy stories in here. We're going to get a lot of reels out of this stuff.
Good. Good. Glad. I'm glad.
And please make sure you come back on if you're going to make it out to Charlotte or High Tech, let me know, and I'll probably meet you out there.
I would love that. And if you ever make it to San Diego, let me know. I'd love to see you. Or if you're going to industry shows or anything, you never know when our paths might cross. I'd love to see you in person.
For sure, for sure. This is Bruce Jordan at MJF Hotel signing out. That was really good.
Good. Okay.